This is TWiT.
The topic that we're going to dive into is something that I feel like I've thought about a lot, but after reading this article, it just put good words to these thoughts, this consideration. So we'll start here. Apple last week unleashed, as we know, I think we talked about it on the show plenty last week, an insane amount of new hardware products for consumers to delight in, as they usually do with Apple products. Last week also happened to be Earth Week. And compared against each other, they kind of highlight a pretty major and very mounting issue for this planet. And joining us to talk all about this is former co-founder and editor-in-chief of 1-0, Damon Berez, who wrote a fantastic op-ed for the New York Times on this topic. Welcome to the show, Damon.
Hello. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. It's good to have some 1-0 alumni on. appreciate you taking out time. And so this topic, this is an important one, right? Because it's not just, you know, we're also used to in the technology world, being passionate about technology, we're used to the next thing, the latest, the greatest, moving on. You know, I can't even tell you how many smartphones I've had and have in a drawer, consequently. And yet at the same time, we're living on a planet that is, you know, over time, kind of in many ways deteriorating and to a certain degree under the weight of all of this kind of consumer technology. So talk a little bit, maybe we can start with kind of the cognitive dissonance between Apple's hardware event and Earth Week. You kind of led your piece on that. So let's start there.
Yeah, absolutely. So there is indeed a cognitive dissonance, as I say. Apple, of course, talks quite a lot about sustainability, sustainable energy, etc. It releases an environmental report every year that talks about its supposed environmental commitments, many of which are very laudable. What it's not doing a very great job on, along with many other companies in the consumer tech space, is electronic waste, making sure that the devices that it creates and ships every single year last for as long as possible and are repairable by the greatest number of people. These are devices that are very difficult to open and repair. There is very little requirement. Really, Apple is not required at all to provide thorough documentation that shows independent repair shops how to repair these devices. And of course, through things like the iPhone upgrade program, consumers are put in a position where they are encouraged to get a new device on an annual basis. And even without participating in a program like that, you're getting maybe a couple or a few years out of these very expensive and wasteful electronics at best. So Apple, along with many other manufacturers, is kind of talking out of both sides of its mouth, where it's saying there are all of these things it's doing to be quote unquote sustainable, but then it's rolling out millions upon millions upon millions of these new devices every single year. And the Earth Week event really puts all of that into perspective. So it's talking about Earth Week and then, hey, we have new Macs and we have AirTags and all of these new metal and plastic devices you can purchase now.
Yeah, so you actually write about planned obsolescence, and I want to talk a little bit about that, because to a certain degree, like I have a hard time finding how I feel about the idea of planned obsolescence. On one hand, I totally believe that it exists. You know, I've certainly had those moments with my device where I'm like, I can't believe this is doing this right now. Oh, this company totally knew this was going to happen. This is by design, right? It feels like a frustrating moment, and it's easy to point the finger. But then on the other hand, I'm like, is that like, would a company actually do that? Is this just some sort of like widely known conspiracy theory that we all just kind of point to planned obsolescence because it's the easy thing to point to? But I guess from a business sense, it makes sense. Maybe it's just not this like this nefarious thing when it's thought of. It's just business as usual. What are your thoughts on that?
Totally. So I think, first of all, you're correct in what you're kind of suggesting here, which is it's not necessarily like Apple has this kill switch and it's like, oh, it's been a year, shut the person's iPhone off and now they have to buy a new one. You know, it's not happening like that. But what does happen, what we clearly see, is that hardware is obsoleted by software updates. So, for example, the new iOS update that happens every year often will remove a generation of iPhone compatibility. Apple's gotten a little bit better at this recently. The most recent version of iOS, I believe it supports back to the iPhone 6S, which at this point is a few years old. So that's kind of nice. But then again, wouldn't it be better if you could still be using an iPhone 5, for example, an iPhone 5C, whatever? The fact of the matter is that software updates will often remove a generation of hardware compatibility. So that's one example of this quote-unquote planned obsolescence. And then additionally, there are things such as the iPhone's battery health. That has clearly been a major issue. And what we have seen in the past is that Apple will, on the software side, throttle an iPhone that has an old battery that isn't at maximum capacity. And that's another way of obsoleting a device. So it doesn't need to be as obvious or as kind of cartoonishly evil as Apple sort of obliterating a bunch of devices. But there are these little things that kind of in a sort of artificial way move an iPhone or a MacBook out of compatibility and make it not work for consumers anymore, essentially.
Yeah, we're talking a lot about Apple here, but obviously this is like a just technology industry wide issue. This isn't just Apple that's doing this. When you mention battery, I mean, I'm on Android. I do an Android show here on the network, so I've played for the last 11 years. I've lived my life on Android, and I would say the number one thing that makes a device, an Android device, obsolete. Well, actually, I guess on Android it's two equal things, right? If it's an underpowered device, it can't keep up, from a hardware perspective, from a processing perspective. But really the thing that I point to the most is that battery. If I was to buy an Android device and want to keep this device for 5 years, let's say, which, let's be real, that should be possible. We should be able to spend as much as we do on these smartphones and keep them for 5 years and use them.
Totally.
But the battery is just not capable of withstanding that. After like a year and a half, we start to notice these huge dips in the battery capacity. And then we have to do other things to supplement it, get a battery case or an external charger that we carry around with us, whatever the case is. And you're right, that's not a sustainable thing, depending. I don't know how it is on Apple, whether it's as steep as it is on Android.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up because first of all, I talk about Apple a lot in my reporting around this issue because Apple is very much the trendsetter in the technology, the consumer tech industry in many ways. And additionally, Apple does talk quite a bit about its environmental commitments. And so that dissonance is always kind of interesting to me. But you are absolutely right that this is a major issue well outside of Apple's walled garden. In fact, many other companies, I think, do a worse job on this count. So you mentioned Android. Samsung, for example, their smartphones are perhaps more challenging than Apple's to service and repair. They come in strange form factors, folded or curved screens, for example, this proprietary kind of Samsung design. They're just as locked down as the iPhone is. So repairs are very challenging on those devices as well. Now, the thing that is interesting about the battery is that it used to be that phones, that computers, that a lot of consumer technology would have modular parts, or it would give the consumer the ability to pop the battery out and replace it with a new one if need be, right? Mm-hmm. Like old Nokia phones always let you do that, for example. Right. Now that everything is bolted in to your smartphone and glued down to the device and sealed in to this extremely small package that the consumer can't actually open themselves, if something goes wrong with the battery and it impacts your ability to use your device, you can no longer just pop that thing out and have a good as new phone. You have to get it serviced, or maybe you think that's not really worth it it's a couple years old. I'm gonna buy the new thing, or I'm on the iPhone upgrade program anyway. I'll get the new iPhone when it comes out in 2 months. So the battery, it's a very interesting issue because we've seen that whole situation has evolved over the course of several years at this point, and is a major driving factor for people replacing their technology.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Another thing that this, reading through your piece, you know, you do spend a lot of time talking or writing about the right to repair and kind of the things that are happening with the French government, the repairability score. Here in the U.S., we're hearing about different pieces of legislation that are in the works about right to repair. How do you think this is going to influence these trends? Like, do you think it will make a marketable difference in how these companies are producing their products, taking the sustainability and longevity away from an afterthought, something they think about afterwards as like a problem that needs a solution after they've already released it, and more into the proactive space where they're designing these products to live longer?
Sure. So the most interesting thing about the right to repair legislation that we're talking about is that it will help the average consumer allow their device to last as long as possible, right? So what this legislation typically seeks is a company like Apple would have to provide schematic information, wiring diagrams, documentation that would allow an independent repair company or individual outside of just the sort of Apple authorized repair outlet that you might see driving around or whatever. It is designed to allow any independent repair organization or individual to access the information they need to fix a device like the iPhone. So what that ends up doing is it will help people like you and me find shops, find people who have the ability to actually fix their device when things go wrong, to extend the longevity of that device, which is very important. And right now, in a lot of cases, you know, I live in New York, you're in California, we are probably accustomed to saying, you know, this isn't that big of a deal, there's tons of repair shops, whatever. But there are a ton of people throughout the U.S. who don't have easy access to good repair options. And then they do have to go through a company like Apple or Samsung directly to get the thing serviced. This legislation is designed to fix that problem. As for whether that ultimately impacts how Apple, et cetera, designs their technology, I suppose that's a little bit hard to say. I would hope that it does have that effect where, you know, maybe they decide, well, this information's out there anyway, we can make it easier to actually pop open the phone and repair the thing. Who knows if that happens? But that doesn't necessarily need to happen for there to be a positive impact in terms of device longevity. And as for what we're seeing in the EU and France with the repairability index score, that actually could influence how consumers purchase new devices, which, you know, people, when the economic situation starts to change a little bit, that's when you might see something interesting in terms of how companies decide to design and release these products.
Yeah, and I know on the Android side of things, we've seen some pretty interesting efforts from the modular perspective. Now, none of it worked. None of it really, you know, came out on the other end as like a total success. Google had its Project Aura that really kind of fizzled before it ever got any sort of actual consumer movement. Moto Mods, of course. Recently, in the last couple of years, we've heard about the Fairphone, which is kind of like a sustainable smartphone with modular parts and everything. But each time, it seems like while I completely appreciate the nerdiness and the intentions of these devices, it just kind of seems like the consumer, like the general consumer, isn't as interested in the idea. Or maybe it's just a failure in marketing, but they never really seem to go anywhere. Do you think that's an idea that's just too far in advance of its possible like time to shine? Like maybe that's an idea that works in the next 5 years, but it was too early to do 5 years ago.
That's possible. I mean, listen, these are niche devices. So Fairphone, for example, that product is still around. And in fact, one of the things that's really great about Android as an operating system is that a company like Fairphone can come along and decide, hey, we're going to build a phone with this OS, and it's going to be modular, and it's going to be a more quote unquote ethical phone than the one you might buy from Samsung. That's great. And that's one of the nice things about Android as compared to like iOS, for example. Only Apple can make the iPhone, right? In terms of consumer demand, I mean, listen, it's niche, you know, awareness around the issue of device longevity and repair, et cetera, is growing, and it has become a much larger issue in the past couple of years even. So the New York Times, they published an editorial about right to repair a couple of years ago, and then mine came around earlier this week. Like, that's a really mainstream thing, and maybe that helps people see this issue in more serious terms, and maybe that becomes a more marketable thing. But, you know, at the end of the day, people also do love these products from Apple, Samsung, et cetera. These phones are nicer than the Fairphone. I mean, in terms of the sort of sleek design and the state-of-the-art features, et cetera, which matter to a lot of people. Nicer than those old clunky modular Motorola phones, even though those were wonderful from the sort of longevity perspective. But, you know, I think more awareness can only help. And perhaps we do start to see that there's a shift here now that more people understand that, hey, maybe I should be interested in a more modular device or something that will last a little longer. Fundamentally, though, the big players in tech are the big players in tech, Apple, Samsung, et cetera. These are the companies they need to receive legislative pressure or otherwise to improve their practices rather than us waiting around and hoping that some much smaller organization is going to be able to design something that ends up becoming popular with a large consumer base. It's just not likely to happen that way.